This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
My style is yet to be determined. One thing for sure, enjoy the process. Relax through it. It's very important. The more you enjoy it and the more relaxing is the environment, the better it's going to be for you. So that's going to be part of it.
Alex Cora met the media today, day one of Red Sox spring training. And that to me is the number one question. The Red Sox made no moves. They brought back the exact same team. It's just, it got lost in the shuffle. But this is a team that has won 93 games each of the last 2 years, won the division each of the last 2 years, got smoked in the first round each of the last 2 years, and for year three, did nothing. Zero. So virtually the exact same roster without Eduardo Nunez. That's the only real difference. Everything else is the same except the manager. Is the manager enough to instill that difference in the team? And I don't know. I have my doubts about Alex Cora. First-year manager on this team, in this market, that's tough, man.
And the more I just hear that clip that you just played, the less I like it.
And so I play that clip because this team needs to be tougher. This team needs more hair on their nuts, if you know what I mean. This team just lacks that something. It feels like a soft team.
Less dancing, more toughness.
Thank you. And he comes in and says, so the real key is to enjoy the process and just relax. Is that what this team needs?
No. What they need is an edge. An edge. They need to play with an edge. That's the thing that's lacking to me. And, you know, Pedroia plays with an edge, but he's going to be out for a while. It's the young guys I'm talking about. They're the core of the team now. Again, and I know we asked this a year ago, but have you ever seen Bogaerts mad? Betts?
No.
Bradley?
The only time I've seen Betts mad is, and I haven't seen it, but I just assume with him and the team in the contract. Because I feel like he doesn't want to be with the team. You told me the other day he didn't even show up to the Christmas at Fenway thing that they do.
The Winter Carnival thing that they did at Foxwoods.
Where everyone shows up, but he didn't?
Yeah. And most guys, there were a couple of people that weren't there, but he was one of them. And again, I think that is revealing.
Okay, but anyway, the team, you're right. This team lacks edge and lacks toughness, and you see it every year when they get in the playoffs. So now Alex Cora comes in, player's manager, ex-player, buddy, you know, buddy kind of thing. It's important to relax and enjoy the process, like... You know, I know you can't come in day one and turn over tables and stuff, but I don't know if that's what they need.
No, there's got to be a little bit of nasty in there. Like, and again, look, let's use the 2013 team as an example. You know, Napoli, Victorino, there's a little bit of an edge there, right? Victorino's like, you know, he's ready to fight at the drop of a hat, for crying out loud. They need some of that. So where do they get that? I don't know. And look, can Cora give it to him? As a competitor, Cora had some edge. He did. He had some of that. And on a team, he had some edge. I mean, look, he almost got in a fight with a broadcaster in Houston. So I think there's some of that in his personality. I think that could serve them well, that element. I'm not suggesting he take on Eck in a fight. We've been down that road. But the other thing is the whole staff has been overhauled. New pitching coach, new hitting coach, and guys who are completely foreign to us on many levels.
So exact same roster, different coaches. Is that enough?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, it reminds me of what you said when they ended up losing eventually to the Houston Astros in the postseason, Maz. Does it feel like losing bothers anyone on this team? And I don't get the impression that it does. And so for him to come in and say, you know, we're going to be a bunch of chill bros this season, the last thing that they should be doing is acting like chill bros.
Okay, your thoughts. Pearl Jam tickets coming up here in a few minutes. We also did some Bruins deadline stuff, so that's on the table as well. Here's Matt in Somerville on the Sox. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, what's happening? Love the show. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just curious as to what the holdup with J.D. Martinez is. And should the Red Sox turn around and maybe offer him like a...
Okay, you broke up. The holdup is that no one's getting signed. There's still those 100-odd free agents. The players have not come down enough, it feels like. The owners aren't budging. Good for them. Good for the Red Sox for not budging. And again, I'll just say it again. Good for the Red Sox for once, finally, not just giving in to Scott Boras. And not buying his bullcrap about mystery teams and third bidders, and like they're not allowing Boras to have his way with them for once. Good for the Red Sox. I've been no on J.D. Martinez this whole way until we started talking today about, has it gotten to the point with these Major League Baseball free agents where you get him for 2 years and $50 million? Like 25 is too much for the guy, but 2 years? Like J.D. Martinez on 2 years for me? Now I'm kind of interested. The 5 at $125 scares the crap out of me for a guy who I think had just a contract run. But if you get him back on a short-term deal where he's still playing for another contract, and whatever he did there to have that second half in Arizona, he can do for you, fine. That'll do.
Yeah, to me, it's the length of the contract that should scare you. The last thing you want is another Hanley or Sandoval contract. That was the problem with those deals.
Correctamundo.
You're given. It's not that you're just giving a lot of money to those guys. You're giving them years on top of it, and they're not that good. you know, look, I don't want to go back to the Stanton thing. The only guys you give years and money to are superstars. They're the only ones who get both. Okay, you don't give both to a guy like this.
Lou in Rhode Island with the Bruins thought. Hi, Lou.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I just want to tell you guys, I love your show, and I applaud what you guys do. You're always right on the ball.
Thanks, Lou. What do you got for us today, though?
Tuukka Rask, I want to ask you guys a question. Every time there's a back-to-back game, Tuukka takes the lesser talent team. What do you think about that?
So I don't think that's always true, Lou. I think what they might do is go back and look at it, look at if the team's a division team or not. And not that Buffalo should matter, but Buffalo's in your division and the New Jersey Devils are not. And I've seen this a couple times on their back-to-backs, that Rask has gotten the division game and Hudobin's gotten the non-division game. Maybe that's it. There's been another case where the Capitals were one of the two teams and they keep Rask away from the Capitals because, well, basically, Rask is the Capitals' bitch. He sees Holtby and wets himself. So he can't play against the Capitals. So he doesn't get the Capitals. Hudobin gets the Capitals. I don't know. I don't think, other than the Capitals, I don't see them protecting Rask much in terms of who they play. They're trying to keep his games down. And Hudobin playing so well is great. Rask is going to be in that 55 games range, which is what Cassidy said before the season even started.
I mean, it's the best sort of goaltending year they've had combined since when?
Oh, no question. Since Thomas and Rask.
I mean, it's been that long, really. And again, I was just doing the math in my head, and Hudobin's on pace for about 30 games, which puts Rask between 50 and 55.
Perfect.
Yeah, so it is. It is almost dead nails perfect.
And, like, they're both in the top 10 in save percentage. Like, this is the best goaltender they've gotten in a long time. And I still don't think that's been the key to the team. I mean, I don't think these goaltenders have carried them. I don't. I think they've been there, and they've been good, both of them. But I think it's been a team thing. On Rask, it's now win around and be a factor in winning around. It's been a long time since you've won a playoff series, fella. For the third highest paid goalie in the league. You know, you couldn't get the team in the playoffs for two straight years. Now you're in it, and you haven't won a round in 4 years, I think.
I want to see how they play tonight, because it feels like there's a skid coming.
We've got, here's Andrew in Burlington. I'm sorry, Andrew, hold on 1 second. I want to get to Chris in the car first on the Red Sox. Go ahead, Chris.
I'm just wondering if you guys think Dombrowski might be setting Cora up. Like, he knew he was going to stand pat. He's waiting for Harper. Cora's kind of a loudmouth, and his initial conference is a disaster.
So setting him up how? Like what do you mean setting him up?
The fall guy, because he knows this year is going to be a calamity. He needs somebody to point the finger at because Dombrowski's sort of on the clock now.
I don't think that's it. If you want to look at a conspiracy theory on Cora, is that the Red Sox were interested in making their first minority hire in that position. And that, and which I don't think is the wrong thing to do, by the way. Like, I'm not criticizing that, but that's one of my concerns about the manager. You know, was that too important a consideration for them? Were they going after the best guy? Or do they want to check a certain box? And in checking the box, you get a less qualified guy. And, I mean, just experience-wise, he is.
I think that was part of it. I think the other thing was the familiarity with ownership. I mean, you know, ownership's familiarity with Cora. It was a known commodity, right? So Bobby Valentine was a freaking disaster. And, you know, Henry and Werner had no connection to him. That was all Lou Kino, and it was an absolute mess. So what did they do after that? They went with a known commodity. They went with Farrell, whom, again, Henry knew, Werner knew. They understood what he was. And I think in this case, that was a big part of it, too. The one thing I'll tell you is, I don't think this is Dombrowski's guy.
No,
I have never felt that.
Me neither.
I can't imagine why Dave Dombrowski, who, you know, has hired Jim Leland and Brad Ausmus up until now, and Leland was a, you know, would have been his first choice, and then Ausmus, again, was a guy that he knew. How does he end up with Alex Cora?
Well, see, again, I think the minority thing is important to the ownership, which is okay. You know, I'm not, again... I'm
right,
not,
but the point is, it's an ownership hire.
It's an ownership hire, I think. But again, between them renaming the street, you know, and what happened last year with all those ugly incidents with Adam Jones and whatnot, and Henry come out and saying he's been haunted by the Red Sox past and all of this. So I wonder if Cora fits into that story, and which, again, is fine, except is baseball the number one and only reason you're doing that hire? And so I just sort of wonder about that.
Well, look, it's a good thing to wonder. I also think that another element is, I mean, look at their good young players. They're minorities. You know, Bogarts is a Reuben. Devers is Dominican. Jackie Bradley and Mookie Betts are African-American. And maybe Cork, he's younger and he's a minority. So maybe he can connect with those guys better than Farrell could.
So, I mean, that's just something I mentioned. My bigger concern is just the first-year manager. It's just he has no managerial experience. He's really only been on the bench once. And this is a tough place, man. That's a tough team. That's a tough locker room. Those are some entitled players there, some entitled soft players, and a really demanding market. That's a lot for a first-year guy who's never had that kind of job. So we'll see on Alex Cora.
Tugger Mez, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
In the middle of last year, I think it was in June, you sort of changed your policy about talking. Are you going to go back to before that?
I mean, we can talk, but you know, you're not going to just come over and kind of overload me with negativity. That's not going to happen. All right, that's not going to happen.
Price says he's talking, but he's not going to let Chauncey pull that crap on him again. You come over, do your thing. You come over here and pull your Chauncey crap, I'm out. Good answer by David Price on that one.
Sean, it's redundant to say you pull your negative crap. What else did you get?
Brad Dan Shaughnessy, Boston Globe. Roger, Dan Shaughnessy, the Boston Globe.
Nope, not going to deal with that.
So Dan had a good back. You know, Dan asked the good questions to Price today. Got some good stuff from him.
My God, I'd rather stick needles in my eyes.
How about the X stuff? Number 11. Give me Price number 11.
And when you speak to things you regret about last year, is the Eckersley thing one of those things? Do you regret the way that played out?
Yeah, I mean, I said it before. You know, I could have handled certain situations last year better, and I didn't. You know, I said that last year in the clubhouse to a big group of you guys. So, again, I could have handled it better.
Do you see him this year? Would he try to make any amends there?
If he wants to talk, I'll talk.
Yuck.
Okay, so again, I could have handled stuff better. Generically is all that he'll say. There's no apology, but, you know, will you go talk to Eck? Well, if he wants to come talk to me.
Certain situations. He kind of...
Yuck.
He doesn't really directly say that specific situation he could have handled better.
Yeah, because he hates Eck.
Right.
Like, so
he wants to talk. I'm here.
A couple of deep breaths, a couple of spits, and we'll have our answer.
Tony, somebody gave him a pep talk over the winter. Somebody sat Price down. Again, it could have been one of his buddies, his agent, you know, wherever he spends the off. Say, I think he's in Tennessee, right? But whatever it is.
Right.
Someone sat him down and said, hey, listen. The market sucks. You might not be able to opt out. I'll tell you right now, the union's going to discourage it, given what the market is. So he's probably getting pressure there. You better make nice. Make nice, because otherwise your life is going to be miserable for 5 more years.
Jimmy, cue up number 9, too.
Spit a couple times. Take a deep breath. Now what?
Okay, so David Price hates it here. He hates us, meaning fans, media. Hates the media. Isn't too keen on the fans either. Just doesn't like it here. Didn't want to come here. He did it because the Sox outbid the Cardinals by $30 million. And so Dan sort of asked him about this as well, and I think Price does a good job of not totally lying. Go ahead, Jimmy.
We know you liked your teammates, and we talked about that extensively last year. When you pitched so well in the playoffs after that game, the game one, it was hard to get you to say anything nice about the fans, or you're talking about your teammates only. How do you feel about the fans of Boston?
I'm fine. You know, I've never, you know, said anything about it. I know, you know, what to expect. I just need to go out there and pitch well. You know, like I just said, if you don't like it, pitch better. And, you know, that's what I plan on doing.
Do you think it's overly critical here with us and the fans and the talk show?
You guys expect a lot. You know, you've had a lot of championship teams and I don't know dating back to how long, but I know the Patriots have won a lot. I think the Celtics in 07 or 08, you know, I remember around then. So the Bruins, you guys, you know, expect a lot. You know, I think guys coming into Boston know that, and you know, just go out there and win.
Okay.
Winning cures everything.
Do you like the fans of Boston? Fine. I never said anything about it. So that you know, at no point does he say, no, I love it here. It's a great place to play. Because he doesn't feel that way. Fine. How you feel? How's he feel about you all? Fine.
And I'm going to filibuster here for the next couple of minutes and just rattle off a bunch of titles won by other teams when what I really want to say is you're a bunch of needy pains in the ass.
So there's David Price stuff as well to talk about. Here's Phil in Falmouth on the Red Sox. Hi, Phil.
Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. So I'm just trying to get a feel for if you guys see this team having a first-year spark like they did in 2013 under John Farrell, or on the flip side, do you kind of think that the Sox will succumb to a split locker room like we saw with the whole David Price, Dennis Eckersley drama last year?
Okay, so I think Maz made a good point earlier. Was the spark in 13 all the new players in that clubhouse, or was it John Farrell? Because 13 was a totally different roster on top of a new manager.
Oh, to me, they had new players that year. That's what that was about. That was about, you know, getting grinders in here, hard-working, gritty guys. And again, Napoli and Victorino and guys like that, Ryan Dempster, you know, guys who had a reputation of being grinders. And that's what they wanted. And look, they got a world championship out of it, amazingly. But dude, typically, you don't win that way. So was Farrell part of it? There was stability there after Bobby V. But to me, that was as much about Bobby V as it was about Farrell.
We'll see. There's a lot of sabermetrics, and there's a lot of numbers and stuff. The whole war stat. When we go to playoffs, you know, it's you want me to go to war with.
We'll see about Cora. They did nothing to change the roster. And we all think that roster misses something, some intangible toughness or winning quality or, you know. And they did nothing in terms of players to change that mix. It's all on the manager. Is that enough? I don't know. Here's Andrew in Burlington on the Bruins. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for holding.
Hey, no problem at all. Thanks for taking my call, guys. I don't know about you guys, but I'm actually not worried about this defense going forward, nor the goaltender. I think historically what's actually been holding this team back is second and third line scoring. So once that first line is actually, as you would say, Felger, rubbed out, who's going to step up? So the guy that I want, I actually want Evander Kane. I think he's an underachiever. I know he's got some injury history. I know he's a bit of an issue, but I think I'd rather overpay for a guy like Evander Kane
Yeah, so I'm just going to stop you. My issue there is Evander Kane is, what, 24 years old or something like that?
He's 26.
Okay, 26. So he's mid-20s. So, I mean, that's you're getting a young guy. You're going to have to give up a slew of young guys to get Evander Kane. Isn't that sort of like
a... He's a free agent after this year, though, I believe.
So go sign him in free agency. You know, I'm not giving up other young players to get another young player. Like, I feel like that's just a lateral move. I'm hoping that the slew of 10 to 12 young forwards emerges and you get your own Patrick Kane that you've drafted and developed. Now, if you're telling me I can package some young guys and get Ryan McDonough, who is a ready-made 28-year-old number one defenseman with a left shot to complement Charlie McAvoy for this year, next year, and going forward as a franchise defenseman, now that to me is different. You're taking young guys and accelerating the process a little bit by getting a proven, ready-made captain kind of player in Ryan McDonough. That's the kind of move I think they should be making. I'm not packaging a bunch of young guys for another young guy.
I mean, McDonough makes all the sense in the world, short-term and long. You know, then if you want to re-sign him, Chara's sort of 42 at that point, phasing out, and you got another veteran guy to anchor your D, and he plays on the left side on top of it, like all of it. McDonough feels like a perfect fit.
I'm telling you.
So the question is the price.
If it's Chara, McAvoy, McDonough, Carlo, Krug, Kevin Miller.
Pretty good.
That's a really good, that's like a Stanley Cup caliber decor right there.
And you still got bodies beyond that for depth in the postseason because you're going to need, what, 8-9 defensemen for the playoffs?
So again, what you get, if the Rangers say we need, what's his face, Carlo coming back.
No.
You know, then that's, now you're sort of treading water. You know, I mean, you see what I'm saying? So it's a, if they can get away, if they could get McDonough without giving up Carlo, and without, you know, and again, I don't want to give up DeBrusque or Heinen, but you've got a million picks and prospects that are just coming up now. I don't know. I think they have the ammo to do it if they want to do it.
Well, they definitely have the ammo. No two ways about it. They got plenty of ammo.
Chris and Wellesley on the Red Sox. Hi, Chris.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Felger, I don't agree with you on many things, but I have three quick points. One, Cora is absolutely a feel-good hire. It eliminates the WMA syndrome in the Red Sox organization. And there's some repair work that they're trying to do there.
What does WMA mean? I'm sorry.
White male American. Come on, it's a PJ reference. You should know that, Mike.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. No, I don't.
All right. So it's, anyway, yep. JD Martinez, a bust, right? He's 31 years old. He wants 10 years with a big money. Don't do it. Guys, this team right here is an 88 to 92 win team, just like last year. They'll lose in the first round. Wait a year. Don't do anything. Go out and give Bryce Harper a 10-year, $400 million deal. Who cares what it takes? And let him be the centerpiece at 24 years old of your organization around Betts and Benintendi going forward.
I'd rather do that than sign JD Martinez to 5-100 or
5-25. Oh, in a heartbeat. I love the idea of Bryce Harper. Rock star. Bring me a rock star. Like, that would put the freaking Red Sox back on the map. Bryce Harper? Absolutely. I love that idea. And look, the more I think about this team, they feel to me like, and I'm going back a ways here, but they feel like 0-2 to me. Okay? And when I say 0-2, the end of 0-1 was a calamity. That was Joe Kerrigan as manager. The whole thing was a freaking mess. And they weren't an awful team, but they were better than they played, if that makes sense. They ended up firing Kerrigan. They brought in Grady Little.
And they went to the ALCS, right?
No, the next year they went to the LCS. In 0-2,
what was the year they got thumped? Did they lose in five to the Yankees in the ALCS?
No, that was 99.
Okay.
That was 99. But in 02, Grady came in. They got off to a great start. They ended up winning 93 games, and they missed the playoffs. Now, back then, it was, you know, four playoff teams instead of five, whatever. But they, you know, they got off to a good start because it was all this good, positive energy, and then it plateaued. And I could see this team doing something similar. They had some talent. They had good talent. They didn't have great talent, a lot like the 02 team. So to me, I sort of feel that vibe with this group, but I don't think right now I don't think they're good enough to win it.
I just wonder how big of a difference can a manager make, because they've done nothing else. Nothing. It's the same exact roster. How much can that one guy make? And 13 is an interesting, you know, they say, well, Farrell made all the difference in 13. Did he? Was it effective?
No. They overhauled the roster.
Was it a totally new roster or was it a new manager? I mean, what was the difference that year?
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This Marquise Flowers?
Oh, they had a tweet storm.
This thing's great.
Marquise Flowers. And you might be asking, who's Marquise Flowers?
Number 59.
I don't blame you. This is a special teamer from Cincinnati that came over, was in the middle of the year?
Yeah.
End
of camp was right before the start of the year, I think.
So it's like a scrub, a nobody, some loser from Cincinnati that the Patriots had to bring over because their roster was so thin. Trade like a seventh-round pick for him or some one of these guys, a special teams guy. Marquise Flowers, who was thrust into a role at the Super Bowl he should not have been thrust into, and sucked. And Greg Bedard wrote this great story highlighting his 17 plays. Marquise Flowers was on the field for 17 plays in the Super Bowl, and in those 17 plays, they gave up something like 240 yards, two touchdowns, and the Eagles scored on or converted first down on like 7 of their 11 third down opportunities. Something absurd. Like every time this guy was on the field, the Eagles made a play. Sucked. And he's a sucky player. He's a nobody. But much like Kyle Van Noy, I got to hear this guy chirping. So this guy chirped Greg Bedard on Twitter.
Bob's big boy going at it with Marquise Flowers.
So Bedard writes it, you know, charts his 17 plays and how wretched they were. And here's what Marquise Flowers tweets. He says, so you got all the answers? Talking to Greg, so you got all the answers? More than Coach Belichick that has been to more Super Bowls than you have been with women! Exclamation point. Bill's been to 11 Super Bowls?
Yeah, 11. Yeah.
What do you think? Bedard's over or under?
Under. Definitely under. The only person...
Oh, no, he went to Rutgers. Rutgers, I think, would be at times a party school. Maybe he got after it there.
What are you saying? Women in New Jersey are easy?
No, college. I mean, in college, you know, sometimes the numbers go up a bit.
I don't know. 11 feels a little high for Bedard. God bless him, but that feels a little high. And the only person happy with that tweet, Bedard's wife. That's it.
And then after, I'm reading from Matt Dolef on 985thesportshub.com. After a Twitter user responded by saying they have questions rather than answers, Flowers responded with the following. Don't blame the coaches. Blame me. They put me in a spot to succeed, and I didn't execute my assignments well enough to win. Well, at least there's some accountability. He also went back and forth with this Lane Johnson, who had those idiotic comments about he'd rather win one Super Bowl and play in some place and be happy versus winning five.
It was that fun.
Yeah, that asinine thing. And so, you know, he went back and forth with him as well, saying, yeah, he's clearly a lot of hot air. Five Super Bowl wins is five times more fun than one. And da-da-da. So here's my issue. Marquise Flowers? Shut up! Who are you? You suck! You shouldn't even be on the team.
How many rings does he have?
If it wasn't for... Yeah, what do you know about fun versus winning versus... What do you know about anything? You're a Bengal.
I think he's getting zero.
And this is the same thing I'd say about Kyle Van Noy, who gets awful chirpy and, you know, sensitive. Like, dude, you suck. If it wasn't for Bill rescuing you, you'd be at the bottom of the roster in Detroit. And Marquise Flowers? You'd be covering punts for the Bengals, dude. You have no clue about any of this. None. And all Bedard did was chart what you did on your 17 plays. Keep it classy, Marquise. Bill's been to more Super Bowls than you've been with women? What happened to ignore the noise down there? I thought you're supposed to just ignore the noise and do your job. No, instead you're supposed to get into tweet beef with Bedard over his fricata charts and get into a back and forth about how many women he's been with?
You know, now that I think of it.
What a bum.
I'm not sure I was over 11. I'm going to think about that.
I was just saying, who are you?
And because of the way it played out and how ugly it was, especially on that side of the ball, Patriots fans want answers, and rightfully so. So
Bedard, not from
just
you.
But Bedard's just doing his job, you know? So calm down, buddy. You were put in a role you shouldn't have, but just be happy you're there in the first place. You suck.
And going at Lane Johnson, like, you know, I've heard Bruschi speak up. I've heard Troy Brown speak up. I've heard, you know, those guys speak for the Patriots. They're Patriots. I don't want to hear you. You don't speak for the Patriots. You shouldn't even be on the team. Really, when you think about it.
16 games. Started 2 with the Patriots. Played the whole year with them. He did, as we checked.
I thought he came in midseason. Either way.
This is a guy seen, not heard, and really not neither after that Super Bowl and the way you played. Shut up. I want to hear from you. Another one of these guys, like, Van Noy's got the same sort of attitude. Like, who are you? You suck. You're not a great Patriot champion. Like, you're not one of these guys. You don't have the right to cop that sort of attitude.
No. See, they put on the uniform, and they think the trophies come with it. That's what they think.
Good God.
Like, the thing with Bedard, to me, was stunning. Like, you know, so look, you lost in the Super Bowl. You get absolutely torched while you were on the field, and you're going to take on a writer who pointed it out? Like, dude, I got news for you. You got bigger things to worry about.
No question.
Like, keeping your job and staying in the league and actually finding a way to win the game instead of losing it. Well, you know, really, the whole thing, I look at that and say, well, you know, this is what you get.
Okay, so that's just why I felt like bringing that up. And we also have Josiah standing by in San Antonio. He's got a football thought for us as well. Go ahead, Josiah.
Hey, man, I was listening to Danny Picard's show the other day, and I think the story is comical. Ron Borges thought that he was talking to Tom Brady's agent. He never confirmed whatever this troll or imposter that was faking to be Brady's agent told him. He ran back, and then it was all over the Boston Herald talking about show me the money. It never dawned on him to confirm who you're talking to. I mean, my goodness, and I thought Ron Borges had a little bit more marbles than that. And then just real quick on the retirement, KG should be retired because if you remember, Ray Allen was moved first because KG declined the deal, and then KG came after Ray accepted. So I think KG, he changed the culture.
Yeah, no, Josiah, put them all up there. Ainge has one title in 18 years. Himmelsbox has put him up. Garnett was here like 4 minutes. 1-1. Put him up there. Go ahead. Put them all up there. You read the Boston Globe. They say Rondo's a debatable one.
Rajon Rondo.
Debatable.
I can't remember. Was it 9? What number did he wear?
9.
That toolbox? Oh, it's gotten so silly with the... Don't get me started with the Celtics again with this.
Oh, God. Well, listen, the Celtics got way too loose way too long ago. I mean, this is like, you know... You start doing what they did early on, forget it. You put everybody up there. Garnett shouldn't be up there. I'm sorry. I feel strongly. I love Garnett, maybe more than anybody. Right? I love Garnett, but his number can't go up there.
I gravitate more towards Garnett than Pierce. Garnett won you that championship. Garnett won Pierce that championship.
No, he was here.
He wasn't here long enough.
I'm not putting him up in the rafters. Don't get me wrong. But I'm a Garnett guy, too. Again, he hand-delivered the title for Pierce. But neither should go. But, I mean, when you think about it, should be a handful of jerseys up there. And the Celtics have totally bastardized that whole thing.
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Well, this is what's fun. And these 2 weeks is when a lot of things heat up. There's a lot of teams, a lot of names. Elliot, a little rapid fire. What do you have?
Ryan McDonough. I mean, he's one of the biggest names on the market right now. A lot of teams are looking at Boston and saying, they can do it. We've mentioned Tampa. And B, you know, there could be a fit on the left side of that Boston defense.
And you just sort of wonder, are they obligated to now, quote unquote, go for it? You have this kind of year. And they do. They have a lot of assets. Between all these draft picks and kids that are coming up, like, they could put together a package for Ryan McDonough. They could. They could do it. And Ryan McDonough is a number one defenseman, and he wouldn't even be your number one defenseman. He'd be a compliment to Charlie McAvoy this year and going forward.
It's a good pairing.
So, I mean, I think you keep Chara there, but, you know, either way, like, if you put Ryan McDonough on your second pair next to Carlo, woof, like, that's, you have a good D. That's a good, legit Stanley Cup caliber defense right there. And is that worth giving up some of these young forwards? I don't want to give up anyone that I've seen. I don't want to give up Heinen, DeBrusque. I don't want to give up these guys. But how about someone like Bjork or you know, this Forsbacher Carlson or Sinisha, like all these young kids who are sort of on the border. Can you get the Rangers to bite on those players? Are you willing to give up those players? So, I don't know. It's an interesting spot for the Bruins. It feels like what they're doing is working, drafting, developing, and these kids coming up feels like it's all working. But now you've had an amazing year. You're at the top of the league. The East is kind of open. And if you have the chance to make a move like that, do you have to do it? It's worth talking about.
See, I think they do. And isn't the Rangers GM the former Bruins director of scouting?
Correct, Mundo.
Yeah, so they got a link there too, right? And these are guys that were drafted after him, so there's not too much inside knowledge. So, I mean, to me, look, he's perfect. He's the exact fit they need, you know, as far as defensemen go.
So that's one of the things we've been talking about. Peter in Newton has a thought. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you, Mike?
Good, how are you?
First time caller. I think the Bruins need offense more than defense. They've got a great defense. They're not allowing a lot of goals. Tuukka Rask is stopping stuff. I think what they really need is one elite scorer. That would make them a legitimate cup contender. They don't beat Washington because once their big line is shut down, then they don't have anyone else that can put the puck in the net.
Okay, so you say elite scorer. I mean, that's super expensive. I don't know what's available, but you want to tell me you can give me a veteran next to Krejci on the second line? Yes. If you added McDonough and something like even Vanek or someone like that to Krejci on the right side, upgrading from Spooner, who I think is going to be eliminated, you know, just rubbed out in the playoffs. Like, that's a real team you're talking about there. Like, that's a real team that has real capabilities of doing something.
Could be fun, right? I mean, it'd be a nice little, you know, get serious about playoff hockey there.
And the thing is now that you have the ammo to do it. If you want to do it, you have the ammo to do it. Should you do it?
Yes.
You should?
Yes. But again, I'm talking, you don't get ridiculous, though. Like, there's a balance there somewhere.
And would you give up Heinen if that's what it took to get Ryan
McDonagh? I'd give up Heinen or DeBrusk, but not both. One or the other, and then fill it out with other stuff.
See, that's sort of, if you've watched the team, and I know you have, but I'm talking to, you know, anyone who's sort of watched the team, Heinen and DeBrusk, like, that's the future, and it's worked. Like, that was their plan to draft and develop those guys, and now they did it, and it worked.
Yeah, but what are you going to do, get McDonagh for nothing?
You're not going to get him for nothing. Do you feel better about, like, if there's prospects that project better, but they're just lower in your system? Like, I know that's the wrong way to approach it.
So, like, use Lozon, Jeremy Lozon, as an example. He's a left-shot defenseman, right? He's a guy who projects long-term to be a good player. He was the guy in the Canadian junior team that played well in the same tournament McAvoy did.
Right.
So there's a lot to like there with Lozon. And they were talking about him at rookie camp when I went over there last year. So, like,
can you get the Rangers to bite on that being the centerpiece prospect going back?
Yes.
Along with a young forward.
Yes, but I don't want to give up Lozon. I like the idea of a good young defenseman. Like, you know, to me, I'd rather give up a win.
Okay, so you're not getting up. The Rangers are going to want a young defenseman in return. I'm sorry. They're not going to send out their franchise defenseman captain without a young defenseman coming back that could potentially replace that.
Okay, so fine then, but that's what I'm saying.
So that's why it's got to be Carlo. Lauzon's not enough. I said Krug before, but he's probably too old and too expensive for what the Rangers want to do, which is rebuild. You're going to have to give up something you don't want to give up.
Yeah, but McDonough's not the only guy they're dealing. They might be able to move Rick Nash and get a young defenseman, and then they can move McDonough for DeBrusk or Heinen, and you throw in, Zboril or someone else. You give them two guys.
The Bruins want to do this. They have the ammo. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I'm a no. I'm not giving up Carlo or anything like that. I feel like, look, this is all gravy to me. Maybe I'm underplaying the season that they've had, but they're ahead of schedule, or where I thought they would be, and I'm not going to give any of these guys who could be transformative players going forward, and I get it. And McDonough's a good player, and he's still, what, a year and a half is what you'd have for him? He's still at another year under contract, but I don't know. I'm not getting rid of anyone like Carlo for him.
Okay, so here's Ray and Revere on the Red Sox. Hi, Ray.
Yeah, guys, I think we're whistling past the graveyard with the Red Sox. They are so far behind the Yankees, it isn't even funny. You know, and I get that we want to be fiscally responsible, but Cody, I think you referenced 03 as a comp for this team, and I think it's more like 95.
02.
Build a wagon. Well, that time frame. Guys, let me just make my point with a couple of trades that Cashman made, okay? He literally had Chapman flipped him for Gleyber Torres, the five-tool best prospect in baseball. He had Andrew Miller. We traded him for Eduardo Rodriguez and his amazing trick knee. He got Clint Frazier and Justice Sheffield, the second-and-fourth prospects. And then Brian McCann got beat out by Sanchez, traded him to Houston for two fireballers, one of which is the centerpiece to the Stanton trade. Guys, the Yankees and Cashman are so far outclassing us right now. I don't think Dombrowski is the guy
Do you concur, Maz?
True. Generally true. Cashman did. He made a bunch of good moves. They got good young talent, and they put themselves in a position to be both good in the short term and the long by making the moves he made. Dombrowski came in and stripped mine the system. So from that standpoint, yes. But so listen, I do think they're going to be chasing the Yankees. But this is also part of the reason I don't want them to get J.D. Martinez, because I don't think that that fixes it. Your best chance of catching the Yankees now is to get what you can out of your young guys. Right, and that means trying to get the most you can out of Bogarts, get the most you can out of Devers, and then see if Benintendi further develops, and wait and see, and maybe you can go get Bryce Harper now. Like, and I'm not saying you should even bank on the Bryce Harper part of it, but the worst thing you can do is commit to more veteran overpaid talent. That's a mistake.
Mike and Eastie on the Bees. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going? I really think that Tuukka Rask is the issue for the Bruins to go on a run here. He's never been past the second round besides the shortened year. Every year he craps out after 65 games. So what's the difference between crapping out at 65 at the regular season or 65 in the second round?
Are you saying bench him going into the playoffs, Mike?
I mean, no, but I think it's kind of the unfortunate reality that this team's playing so well and he's hit his hot streak now as opposed to in the playoffs when you need him to.
Well, let's see, Mike. Let's see. It's a lot on Rask. He's square in the prime of his career. He's been rested this year. He's going to get his, 30 games of rest because Hudobin has played so well. And it's just worked out that way. So Rask is going to go into the postseason with between 50 and 55 starts, which is a nice light load. He's in the prime of his career. He's the third highest paid goalie in the league. No excuse. He's got a good team around him. No excuse. No excuse for him not to play well and for him to win a round at least and show well in the playoffs. No excuse. So let's see.
I mean, the durability thing is a great point. The year they made the cup run was a short season.
It was the strike year, yeah. 13.
I mean, he only played 36 regular season games that year.
That's it. So he's gonna play around 50 this year. So it's all set up for him. It's all set up for him. No excuses, Tukes.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.